Of Israel 6.
Right. On the
something else about the camps that you wanted.
Yeah, we used to go for a fortnight, you know. And on the first weekend, the wives could come and visit them, sort of thing. So a lot of the wives used to come on the Saturday or the Sunday, and you used to get more or less get the day off, you know, if your wife came to go off with them. That was a thing I remember. Them, all the a lot of the wives used to come because they knew they were going to get a £5, so they knew they could bottom one to get the fare. It was always, it wasn't, there were not a great distance. We used to, as I say, we had a camp at Richmond, we had a camp at Saltburn, we had a camp at Whitby, we had a camp at Annick. Well, that was a sort of areas, you know, as far as you went. It's 30, 40 miles from there, all within a 40-mile radius of Durham. So it wasn't too far, really. And the transport was pretty good, and then you get the trains, a lot of trains. So that them, not all, but them with those wives could afford it, would come for the day.
We're just talking about when you were mobilised. Did you have to volunteer from being a territorial to the regular army? What was that process? Did you have to actually volunteer?
No. Well, you signed articles. I suppose you could call it a volunteer, and you signed articles to become more or less a regular soldier as against the territorial. Because it was written into your agreements, I suppose, when you joined the Terriers. You were training to be, you know, in case of... Because it wasn't like the regular army in itself. You didn't live in barracks and that. You didn't get paid as such. You got so much a drill, you know, so many drills. But you lived at home and that, and you were only a part-time soldier. But once the war court broke out, you became a full-time soldier, and you had everything went on a war footing. I had to post me guards, had men in the drill hall, had men sleeping, and had men in the dogs, the football field inside behind the drill hall, and that they were all stationed. You had to put your guards, you had to have guards. People were stopped. Even civilians weren't allowed to come near, you know, to stop them. Because it became serious business. A serious business. We took it serious.
Did he carry live ammunition?
Oh, yes. Yes, we're issued. Yes. We're issued, I think, where 5 rounds, I think it was. Just in case, I suppose. Had to be accounted for every day, like, you know, didn't give them much, just in case, because you never knew when you had full pack, everything. If you came on, I remember I came on leave from, of course that was after this. When the war was well advanced then, but you had to travel with full kit.
Were you issued with any, when war started, were you issued with any more kit?
Steel helmet. We issued with the steel helmet. We didn't have steel helmets. We had caps. And then we got the forage cap. The little, it was against the peak cap. And then we got steel helmets. We didn't have steel helmets till after the war was declared. It's funny that. We used to do all when it was in the peak cup. We never had a... And then when we got the new kit, of course, you had what they call a forage cap, which you could loosen down to come over your ears. We weren't allowed to do that like that. Like, you know, you used to walk and you had to wear it straight. Some regiments wore it on the cant. But the Terriers always wore it straight on the head. When one's supposed to have it on the side. Too jaunty, that. Yes, little things like that. But, and the company commanders were pretty hot on it.
We're just starting to talk about your first camp, your first billet after you were mobilised. And you you mentioned that you were
in Oxfordshire, yes.
Hayloft in Oxfordshire.
And that was in...
How long were you there?
October we went there. We were there about... till after Christmas. Because remember, we got a Christmas read and we didn't go to France till after Christmas. After the New Year, really. And I remember, I wouldn't go. But I wouldn't go and be... I hadn't been vaccinated. Dad didn't believe in vaccination. And I wouldn't be vaccinated. Everybody in the battalion had been vaccinated, and I wouldn't. And I held the battalion up. And then come, was this, what was it, Sergeant? Look here, Sergeant Duke. She says, look, you're holding this whole battalion. She says, we've got to get into France. She says, no, you're going to be vaccinated. So I said, I had to be vaccinated. Mine was bloody ill and all. I remember, oh, my arm, yellow mass. And I went to see the MO, and oh, he said, that's beautiful. He said, I could inoculate, I could vaccinate 100 men out of that. I was bad, but...
What was that for? What was the vaccination for?
Well, I didn't... I had a valid argument. I said to the MO, I said, if you can give me a guarantee I won't get TB from this vaccination, I'll be vaccinated. And he couldn't. Because you could get TB through vaccination. And I said, if you give me a guarantee, I'll be vaccinated. I said, otherwise, I'm not going to be vaccinated. So... But I did, he had to be vaccinated. Anyway, I wanted to go to France, like, you know.
Before we get to France, I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, about your initial billeting in, down in Oxfordshire. You mentioned this barn thing. I just wondered if you could describe the accommodation there.
We were billeted in the village hall. The men, of course, were some... Sergeant Pallet of Plume, he was in the church for an ancient church, you know, sort of buildings attached to the cannon there. He, a nice old man, but it was split in the village, different places in the village. They didn't take any houses over, but they had the village hall and the church buildings. So that's where the company was built at. And we went on firing courses there to get used to firing live ammunition, because, you know, you only did it once. When you used to go fire a course once a year, you should go down to Whitburn for a weekend, stop there, go on the Saturday, and stop the Saturday night, come back on the Sunday, and you had to fire there at least 10 rounds from your rifle and a magazine from the Bren. To get the, but that's the only practice we had with firing actual live rounds. Of course, once that came in and went to somewhere near Birmingham, where was it? I don't know, somewhere big ranges there. We went and done a lot of real firing, you know, all the men to get used. We were there quite a while. I enjoyed it. I remember the men were beer drinkers, but down there they drink all cider, nearly all cider. So they clubbed together to get a hogshead of Newcastle brown ale. Newcastle beer. All the men put a few pounds. And of course, I waited, and eventually they sent it down. And of course, in them days, beer was beer. It wasn't keg beer, it was in a big barrel and had to be put up and left for about 3 days to settle, you know, travelling before they could put a tap in and plug it and draw it off. And all waiting in anticipation of this beer. And of course, the other companies got an arbor. It was only the eighth had the gumption to do it.
The 8th Battalion.
And we had this big barrel of beer, which was sold, and when this is gone, we'll put together have another one. Never got a chance to get another one down late, but I remember the old, it was an old, he was a road sweeper, an oldish man, getting on 60, 50, 60, and he used to keep the sweep the roads. That was his job, like. Not that there was much to do, it was just country roads. And he had never tasted beer in his life. He just soaked cider. He'd never been out the village, I think. And so they gave him a pint of this brown ale, the castle brown ale, and made him drunk. He says, it's good stuff, it's good stuff. But the same, their stuff used to knock us, scrumpy, they used to knock us out, it's the same. Because we weren't used to cider.
So what sort of things were you doing down there in this period between there and going to France?
Well,
what sort of activities
marching,
were you doing?
Keeping fit, we should go do a lot of marching in routes, because you go on church parade and things like that, and getting used to being away from home. You know, because we were territorial soldiers, understand. We'd never been away from home. We'd go a fortnight once a year. But we were away from home, you see, and you had to get used to roughing it, learning to adapt, take things in your stride and adapt to whatever conditions you had. So that was one of the reasons, I suppose, why they sent like that. And we used to, we did a lot of firing, as I say, we'd get used to our weapons. Did a lot of gas drill, because they were frightened of gas, like, you know, we were shooting gas capes and got extra kit.
Did you get gas masks? And
we got a lot of gas masks, really.
How did that work, the gas training? How did that work, the gas training? What did you do?
Oh, well, gas, so you yell gas and get your mask on as soon as possible. It's on your chest, whip the flap up, out and straight away. Give one yell of gas and get your mask on. That was a great thing. And then unroll your cape. Get your gas cape on. For most of these, most of the gas. We did a lot of aircraft firing practice. Because by then we knew Poland, he'd done Poland, and we knew that these dive bombing things was coming. And we had to be prepared for a lot of aerial attacks. So we did a lot of, you know, you go on much marches, and then suddenly I say, aircraft, right now. Straight away they get, set the sights at 200 and get together and get them ready to fire. See, there was no aircraft there, but it was drill. So that, you see, it's quite young, you got practice to become proficient. And we used to, had a good platoon, had them trained. I used to put them through other pieces. You couldn't stand any nonsense. I remember one section was Cook, Tim Mansell, big raw-boned fellas, boxers. Tim Mansell was a boxer, he was a fighter, but 14 stone. And they went off, got drunk, come back, and they were in a barn place. And of course they were drunk, and they boarded it up, and of course they had live ammunition. Sergeant Major Stoner's company says, Sergeant Douglas, get a wound there and put them buggers in that place. I says, they're all gone down. Sergeant Major Quaid, he says, you go down, he says, because I was a boxer and a prison soldier. And I went down, I said, well, somebody's going to get killed here. Because they threatened, in fact, they'd let two or three rounds off through the door, that the door barred up. They were mutinying, I was summit. But they'd been out and had a drink. And they were tight, really, half tight, anyway. Most. So I went down anyway. I said, open this door, and anyway. Oh, I said, Sergeant Douglas. Anyway, they did open the door, and I attacked them. I got them settled down. But little Vincent is like that, you see. But they knew me, they respect us. They knew I was a good soldier, they knew I was fair. I wouldn't stand any nonsense, but they knew I was fair. I mean, if I put a man in the charge, he deserved it. So, I remember I put one man in the charge and I withdrew it because they should have been in charge. But I said, well, I said, sergeant, sergeant, the major, they were drunk, man. I said, they're good lads. Anyway, if that had gone through, they could have been shot. Mutiny. Oh, they could have been shot. But as a part doing him, he had it taped off the charge. He chained it and got past that one like. I says, you'll be glad for that sort of thing when we get into action. I say, these lads are fighters. So that was another instance I remember in Oxford. And then we used to go every Sunday, we had marched into Charlbury for Kurt's Parade. Where there was wasn't many church people among them. And I used to march them. I used to march them to, you know, just outside the town. And I said, right, fall out. Light yourselves a smoke. I did half an hour. I didn't take them to church. I used to march them back. It was things like that that didn't count. I was prepared to say, oh, it's hard in the weekend, that bloody church. They didn't hate the church parade. A lot of them were. None of them was real church school. One or two was, like, but not, most of them weren't much church now. I wasn't a church school myself much in them days. So, and that's where I met King George in Charlesbury before we went to France. The wall marched up in the square and he walked along a sergeant. Striker spoke to us, King George. That's the present Queen's father. The other one had abdicated. He abdicated. George the
Edward.
Edward the North. George. Edward abdicated. And George the Sixth, wasn't it? George the Sixth. I remember him. His face was powdered, like talc. Some of them, I remember them. That stuck in my memory, because we're all right in the square. All the whole battalion was, and he would come right around the lake before we went to France. Inspected one. I remember that. That stuck in my memory. Some things you remember easy. That was another thing, and I remember the. That a lot of the lads got on with the lasses down there. The one lad, he married a girl in Spelsby. He got on with one of the girls, and after the war, he married her and went there to live.
Did you have much free time when you were down there?
Oh, yes. Yes. We were free every evening. Of course, there was guards posted in that lake, but you got your evenings off. Not. They went to Gannon out, it wasn't out there, right in the country, like. But we used to go and there was a big hazelnut grove, some lord of there. We used to go up there and gather nuts, you know. But we never got a chance to eat them. And they got a little green. But we were, just after the New Year, we went to France, so we didn't. But we got to know the people. In the village, just a very small village, you got now, and the people got to know us. And I remember one, there was a girl who used to make the dinner for the sergeant's mess. She was a good cook. And we fed well there because she was a lovely cook. And she used to, every Sunday, we got our dinner. She used to fetch, used to cook a bit dinner for the sergeant's mess. So we did well there.
Like, so you did well for food. Where was the sergeant's mess? Where was the sergeant's mess?
It was in the village hall. The village hall, that's where the That's where the sound was most wave. Of course, the men slept with a platoon, but they used to go there for the meals, like, because you had to have that distinction between the men and sergeants. The British Army revolves on the sergeants' mess. It's not the officers. The sergeants run the British Army, you know. He's the man, the sergeant. The rest are just officers. Where they come, they're figureheads, really. They've got education. And one time you had to be money to get to be a commissioned officer, you know. But the sergeant runs the whole British Army revolved on the sergeant. He's the man. He takes the orders and gives them out. Carries them out. But the officer just gives them out. He gets his orders from him, he passes them on and depends on his sergeant. And his sergeant depends on his corporals. So the better you train them, the more proficient they become. And we were a good young. And of course they were good, hard working lads, and they were fit. They were fit as fiddles, you know. We got fit. It was some bloody cold weather there. We got in marches and frost.
Bitter cold. You're talking about the winter time, aren't you?
Yeah. Hmm?
You're talking about winter coming on.
Winter, aye. Oh, aye. Of course, you should get your orders, route march. Take your platoon for a 5 mile, you had a gun, and you had to follow your orders. You got your orders every day, whatever it was, what you had to do, and that. You just followed your orders. You trained to do it. And if they said you'd march to point A or point B, where it was, you marched there. As I say, church parade, I used to sometimes miss, you know.
So what was a typical day like then when you were doing this training? Eh? What was a typical day? What time was Reveille? What was your typical day like?
Well, strange enough, it was fairly lax. It wasn't too bad, you know. You had your Reveille, and of course you had your parade. You take the men for a run, maybe, for breakfast. Run around the village, a mile or so, warmed up. And then had their ablutions, washed, shaved.
Where was that? Where? What was the sanitation? What did it consist of, the sanitation? Where did you get washed and...
Oh, where they had...
the toilets, what were they like?
They used... whatever there was, a horse trough. This was part of a preparation for getting into the field, into action, into France, into battle. You see, this is... you had to... find ways and means of getting washed and shaved. But you had to be on parade and you had to be washed, shaved, clean, no straw in your hair, you had to be smart and it was up to them. And if they were, they were on charge. And you could be docked pay, and that was a real hardship. Didn't often happen to that, but you'd get confined, but that didn't count much either, like, because we wouldn't part again. And anyway, on a weekend, they could get into Oxford. Maybe have a trip into Oxford. There would be maybe the truck later on to take seamen he may be picked to go into Oxford for a half a day. That sort of thing. They looked forward to it. Didn't have much money, but it was a day out for them. And of course, they say, wait, if they were on a charge, you don't get to Oxford, so that was the thing you could hold over them, you see.
So discipline was still quite strict. Discipline was still quite strict. You still had your parades and inspections.
Oh yes. These were orders from battalion, from brigade. See, that they came down. But it's fatal, you can't let a man be idle. He's got to keep him occupied. You've got to keep him occupied. Soldiers should never have time on his hands. He has free time, but when he's on parade, and that's it. And that's the opportunity. That's the attitude I take as well. I didn't say I was fair, but I always made sure that the rifles were clean, in good working order, clean, dry, and slightly oiled. And of course, we used to, after firing, had a boiling water down the barrels, pulled through, get across a lot of shit in after you fired them, you know. We did quite a bit of firing, and of course, there was always a rifle inspection. I would give them, you know, a couple hours, and then I would have a parade for rifle, only for rifle inspection, and made if they weren't clean, they were all for it, and then you would. Because your rifle's your best friend. It's your best friend in a war. Your weapons. Without them, you're nothing. I was hard on them in that respect. I was fair. And they knew it. They knew it. Some of the other sergeants weren't. They were, you know, I was young, like, and now full of vim and bigger and sort of. But Tip Stonehouse and the sergeant major and Palliser and them—they were older people and had more experience than me, like. And I've got guidance off them, like, and all. So I see. Sometimes I'd put a man on charge and the last mate would tell us really that the wrong charge that altered to this and that. Funny thing, army rules and regulations is that thick. the army rules and regulations are something that I studied them later now, and because you can't hold in your head, you know, what you have to do.
So were you responsible for the day-to-day discipline of the men underneath you?
Yes, you were. They were your men. You had to say they were fit, fighting fit. You had to say they were clean. I used to have foot inspections. And we had a bath parade once a week. We were going to have a real good bath, you know, in one of the, in Oxford or somewhere, one of the bigger cities. But in between, when I was always a clean man, and as I say, we had horse troughs and was water, and they had you can wash your mess tin. You did everything in your mess tin. You put your food in it, you washed in it, you shaved in it, and that was it. You had to learn to be a soldier, an active soldier, like in the field. I can imagine in the First World War what it must be like in the trenches, you know. They had to have discipline, even there, they had to have discipline.
Who were you responsible to then?
Me? I was responsible to be Sergeant Major, Company Sergeant Major. He was my boss, and there was the PSM above him, and of course you had your platoon officer, you know. He would give you orders. He was the man who got orders.
What rank would he be?
Eh?
What rank would he be?
Lieutenant, first lieutenant, just normally lieutenant. Was an officer for each platoon. My officer was him. He was just fresh out of college, tall, gangly, and it was him and Lieutenant Cook, I think it was. They went one weekend and got tight, and they come back singing their heads off. Well, that was bad for discipline.
What was his name?
Taylor.
Uh-huh.
I used to call Charlie. I used to call him, well, the lads call him Charlie, got not to his face, but Charles Taylor, Major Lieutenant Taylor. I remember they would have a stage in a boxing bout exhibition, and he volunteered like for me to fight me. Oh, the lads, get up. Well, I couldn't do that. I mean, I had I sparred with him, Norwood boxing. So I just we put an exhibition on it. Well, I couldn't do him. He was my officer.
You couldn't bring yourself to hit him. I mean,
that would have been dead bad for discipline. So we boxed and then had a good shoot. Well, why didn't you flatten them charges?